Building block number one, achieve and handle success. And so if you're there and you can see that, you might want to take some notes. But have you ever wondered why some people are successful and some seem to always struggle? Well, that's a question that I've asked myself many times because I study successful people. And obviously there are many reasons for this, but if you study the lives of successful people and successful organizations, which I think everyone listening to my voice wants to be successful and you want to have a successful organization, you want to find some common denominators. What do people do that are successful? Well, there's a lot of things, and we're not going to get into all of them tonight, but there's a few things we're going to talk about. And I've spent my entire career studying these types of people and organizations, and I found some things, some traits, if you will, that we all need to apply or maybe reapply to our lives. And the first one is follow your passion. Follow your passion. You know, one of the key elements to success in life and business is having a passion for what you do. It is no fun to get out of bed in the morning and go, oh, man, I got to go to work. I got to go into the office. I got to go open the shop. It's no fun. And there's a limit to what you can accomplish when you feel, there's no limit to what you can accomplish when you feel passionate about it. There's no limit. Passion is the fuel that gets you out of bed in the morning. It helps you endure while performing tasks that you don't consider enjoyable. Like some of you don't like doing bookkeeping. Some of you don't like all the details. Some of you don't like marketing. But passion is what will help you do it and enjoy it along the way. Passion also gives you the strength to successfully deal with problems and challenges. Now, how do you find your passion? Well, I write about passion a lot, helping people in seminar settings to find their passion, because I think it's a very important thing in life. So let me give you four things, just four, that if you apply these, I think you're going to find that you can find your passion. Number one, what would you do if you could do anything at all and not fail? What would you do if you could do anything at all and not fail? And then kind of a second part to that is, what would you do if you could do anything at all and not fail? And money was no object. You had all the money in the world. A third thing would be, what situation, you know, like on the evening news or in the daily newspaper or on the internet, it touches your heart the most? What situation touches your heart the most? And then a last question, and these are basically very, very, very simple questions. I realize that, but boy, are they powerful. What type person or culture or lifestyle or material item are you drawn to the most? So what would you do if you couldn't fail? Well, you know, you'd start a retirement home for single elderly adults, because when you watch the evening news, you see how that single adults are really getting abused. And I'm just making this up hypothetically, of course, but then, you know, what people type or culture or lifestyle touches your heart? It's single elderly adults. And so that's what your passion is, and your business or your drive in life ought to be along that line. The second thing is, have a clear idea about what you want to do. Oh, man. You know, we all, if you went to college, that was one of the things college was, I guess, supposed to help you do, is help you find out what to do. Well, you know, in just a few days, most of us will do the same thing. In just about, 3 weeks now, about the time we're watching the New Year's Day parade, we're going to begin thinking about 2009. We're going to begin dreaming about what we want to accomplish, how much weight we want to lose, or relationships we hope to have formed, or whatever, by the end of 2009. You know, most of us call those New Year's resolutions, but by the end of the year, we look back and realize that we didn't accomplish all that we had hoped we would have accomplished. Now, New Year's resolutions are really goals. That's all they are. And there are three basic but very important steps to take when you're setting a New Year's resolution or a goal. And we're going to break down goals a little bit more later, but let me just share with you three important steps. Number one, dream what you want. Dreams do come true. You know, it's not just Disney World that says that and implements that. It really is true. Dreams come true. Number two, decide why you want that. Don't just dream it, but decide why you want it. And number three, determine a plan to get it. Now, this is the step that I feel most people leave out. You dream what you want. You want to have a body that is to kill for. And decide why you want it, because you want to be healthy and you want to attract that right woman or right man, or you want to just impress the mirror or whatever. But you don't determine a plan to get it. And many people leave that out. I think it's one of the most important of the three. If you're not going to develop the plan to get it, you probably shouldn't even dream it, because you're not probably going to make it happen. The next one is find a niche and be the best that you can be. Find a niche and be the best that you can be. You know, Booker T. Washington once said, do the common things uncommonly well. And John Eldridge said in Wild at Heart, he wrote, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Now, both of these people give us some good advice. Once you find what makes you come alive and you do it uncommonly well, you will discover that you have found your passion. So you follow your passion, you have a clear idea of what you want, you find a niche, and then you make a difference. It's been said that the only thing that lasts long after you are gone are the relationships that you leave behind. In some respects, that's true. All the money you made will not be in your pocket, and property deeds will not be alongside you in the coffin. However, there is something else that will continue long after you pass from this world to the next. If you look into history books, you'll find people that made a difference. We still feel the impact of their existence today. I can think of at least two things that you can begin doing today that will extend your difference-making ability long after you're gone. The first one is, live a life that is worth remembering and writing about. You know, statues in town squares, you know, the center part of Main Street or whatever, they're always erected in the memory of someone that made a real difference. And most are people that did the common things uncommonly well. The second thing is, start something that will outlive you. What? Well, like your business? Well, possibly. Let me give you an example. There's a person that I'm going to name here in a second you never heard of. His name is Grant Powell, Dr. Grant Powell. And about 20 years ago, Dr. Grant Powell moved his little family to a small, unheard-of town in Florida. And he had a dream of making a real difference in the community and worked hard doing just that. And after being in that town for about 10 years, Grant and his wife Jennifer began to have a dream of starting a private school, one that would not only teach the three R's, but would do it with class and excellence. Now, this school is now a reality, and it has hundreds of children and students attending each day, and ground being broken for new educational buildings while we speak. In short, Dr. Powell has started something that will not only outlive him, but his children and their children. So make a difference. The next thing is, keep it simple. Building block number one is full of things. You just got to keep them simple. Now, there's an old saying that I want to change. You might have heard it. It's put this way, KISS, K-I-S-S. And the acronym says, or stands for, keep it simple, stupid. Well, I want to change it to this, something a little more positive, and that is, keep it short and simple. You know, many times we make life so complicated. The secret is to do what you do best and stick to it. Don't make things more complicated than they really are. And much of this is a mental exercise that you must go through every day. And if you apply some examples I'll give you here in a second, you're going to live a life that's very simple. First of all, live your life to the fullest each and every day. Just live it to the fullest. Go Mach 3 with your hair on fire. Just live it to the fullest. Number two is love your family members as if you will never see them again. I know it's kind of a morbid thought, but really, love your family members as if you'll never see them again. When you leave the house in the morning, kiss your spouse goodbye, hug your kids, not because you just doing it out of obligation, but because you really care about them. And the last one is let your passion drive your career, your life, your day, your agenda, everything. Be passionate about what you do. The next one in building block number one is go with your instincts. Now, never underestimate your instincts or your intuition. If you have to work hard at selling yourself on an idea, it's probably not a good idea. Your instincts are like muscles, and they get stronger the more you use them. So go with your instincts, especially you women out there. And that's not a sexist comment. It's just there's something built into most women. They have this great intuition, and us men in particular need to listen to it. And the last one I'll give you is value your time and be a good time manager. Now, I teach on time management a good bit, too, and here's just a couple points for you. Number one is take charge. Decide now that you're going to get on top of managing your own time. Take charge of it. Remind yourself that poor time management is nobody else's responsibility but your own. The next one is be decisive. Don't put off decisions. In other words, remember this. There's often time later to reverse an early decision. There's rarely time to correct a late one. I'll say that again. There's often time later to reverse an early decision. There's rarely time to correct a late one. The next one is prioritize. Decide what is worth an allocation of your precious time and what is not. And don't let others set your time agenda. And then plan extensively. You know, I tell people plan out tomorrow today. Plan out next week this week. Plan out next month this month. And plan out next year this year. And the last one under value your time is delegate. Give away to others what you need to be giving away. Give away what others can do so that they can begin to reach their potential and you can reach yours. So that's building block number one, achieve and handle success. The next one is manage your life's agenda. Manage your life's agenda. Let me just give you some thoughts on, you know, the importance of a daily agenda. John Maxwell said, the secret of a person's success is discovered in his daily agenda. Boy, I believe that. Another quote by Brian Tracy, the whole purpose of time management is to enable you to have more time to spend with the people you love doing the things you enjoy. In other words, your passion. The next one is perhaps the most valuable result of an education is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. The guy said that was Thomas Huxley back in the 1800s. And one more I'll give you. Every morning when the alarm goes off, we have a totally new opportunity to do what we want with the hours we've been gifted. Gifted. We have the hours gifted to us. And we are gifted with that clean slate every day for the rest of our lives. The guy that said that was Hiram Smith. He was the originator of the Franklin Planner. So how do you really manage your life's agenda? Well, let me give you a couple ideas. First of all, if you start with a P, so they're going to be easy to remember. Prepare for your day. We talked about this just a little bit ago, kind of in general, but you plan out your tomorrow, today, and that kind of thing. But prepare for your day. Start your day off with a couple of things. Number one, read. The average man upon finishing high school, this is the average person, will not read another book the rest of his life. And that's pretty sad because really reading is like the brain's exercise. Now, if you don't want to grow, then just watch TV. If you don't want to grow and exercise your brain, don't read. But my challenge to you is to read 1 hour of every day. And I don't care if you do it, sit down and read for one solid hour, or you read two times for 30 minutes, or six times for 10 minutes. It really doesn't matter. But read, let me give you a challenge. Read, start now, and read for an hour every day. If you read an hour a day at an average pace, you will have read one book in a week. And that's 52 books in a year. And studies say that if you read five books on any one subject, you could be considered a world-leading authority on that subject. Well, hey, if you read 52 books on one subject, what are you going to be then? So read 1 hour of every day. The next thing is exercise. Now, this one hurts because I don't exercise near enough. If you really want to be healthy inside and out, you simply must incorporate exercise into your life. Regular physical activity is a major contributor to effective weight loss. Well, that's kind of obvious, but it improves your physical health, your emotional well-being, and guess what? When you exercise, you work harder, you work smarter. There's simply no replacement for exercise. A consistent exercise program offers a reliable, natural way to boost your mood and increase your self-esteem, makes your attitude better usually, keeps you healthy. So exercise. And another one for preparing for your day is positive thinking. You know, a positive attitude will make you more likable. People are going to want to spend time with you if you're positive. And believe me, if you're negative, they don't want to spend time with you. A positive attitude will make your life more enjoyable. You're going to love your life. And because you love it, other people will too. It's going to make you more successful. Positive thinking is like putting on your power suit. It's going to make you more successful. You know, the mind is a powerful tool, much more powerful than any computer. I mean, minds developed the computer. You know, minds helped man land on the moon, develop the World Wide Web, and transplant a living heart from one person to another. It will help you accomplish your dreams. Succeed where you've never succeeded before and dream new dreams to start the process over. So each day, take time to exercise your brain with positive thinking. Another point under the building block number two is plan for your day. Now make a list of what you want to get accomplished. Some people say, well, you know, you get Outlook out and you make your task list. Or some people say, well, get a 3x5 card and write three things down or five things down. That was Mary Kay Ash's, claim to success and getting things done, as that's what she did. You know, that's fine. Lee Iacocca said you've got to put down on paper the 10 things that you absolutely have to do. That's what you have to concentrate on. Everything else, forget about it. That's Lee Iacocca. Now, you've got to begin to make a list and plan for your day. Then review the list at the end of the day and hold yourself accountable. If you had a list of 5 or 10 things and you got 3 of them done, you're going to move them to tomorrow, but ask yourself why you didn't get them done. And now I want to give you something to think about. I want you to take time to manage your time. It takes time to do that. Now, if I told you that I was going to give you $86,400 today, you'd be pretty happy about that, I'm sure. Now, I can't hear your voices right now, and I certainly can't see your faces, but if I were in a seminar setting and I asked you that, and I asked you to raise your hand if you'd like $86,400, everybody hearing my voice would raise their hand. There would be nobody, except maybe one little person sitting back in the back of the room going, there's a catch to it, don't you do it. I know there's going to be a catch somewhere. You know, well, he's the pessimist. But $86,400, I'll give it to you today. There's only one catch, though. You've got to spend all of the money, and what you don't spend, you've got to give back to me. Now, you'd work it really hard spending $86,400. Who wouldn't? Well, you've got the same deal, but they're seconds. There are 86,400 seconds in every day. And at midnight, what you don't utilize, you're never going to get back because the clock starts over. Now, something to think about when you're planning your day is organize your time with blocked time. In other words, organize your agenda with blocked time. Block out time for your family. Block out time for yourself. Block out time for phone calls. Block out time to have fun. Believe me, you need to have fun. Block out time for meetings. Block out time for dreaming, for special projects, and block out time to read emails. Probably the biggest time stealer is the little ding, ding, ding when the emails come in, and immediately your mind changes gears and you go to read. Don't do that. It takes about 30 minutes for you to get back to what you were doing. So, excuse me, block out time to read emails. Napoleon Hill said, well, the third one is priorities for your day. If you're looking at your screen, priorities for your day. The last one in building block number two. And Napoleon Hill said, it's not what you are doing, or going to do, but it's what you're doing now that counts. Well, look at it this way. Your life is a glass jar. And you fill it full of large, medium, and small rocks. The large rocks are your priorities. They've got to go in first, because if you put the little things in, like reading emails, and I'm not diminishing the importance of some emails, but if you put the little things, the unimportant things in first, the little rocks, you'll never, ever get the big ones in. You don't believe me? I challenge you to try it. Now, if you need help with an overloaded to-do list, let me give you some help. Rank them from high, medium, and low urgency. The low urgency, either put them off to tomorrow or delegate them. And just as you can look at your checkbook and determine what is important to you, you can also look at your daily agenda. So there's never been a dying businessman in a hotel room thinking, boy, I sure wish I'd spent more time at the office. So let me give you a challenge here, too. Make a list of the most important things in your life, and then evaluate where they are on your daily agenda. So that's building block number two. Manage your life's agenda. Building block number three. This is navigating through conflict. Navigating through conflict. Now, conflict is something that you can't see. You can't smell it. And you can't taste it. But it can be felt, and it can be heard. In every home, in every business, in every church, there's conflict. It's inevitable. And you know conflict is going to show its ugly head sooner or later, because all of those groups are made up of people. And how you deal with the conflict will reveal your leadership style, your level of maturity. It's going to really just show who you are and your experience. How you deal with it is really a leadership issue. While others are running around in circles, jumping ship and wishing they could go back, a leader steps up to the front, seizes the opportunity, and navigates the organization through the storm. Now, it's been said, navigating through conflict can be learned, but it must be learned in conflict. We live in a world right now that's full of conflict, not just because of people, but because of all the things going on with the stock market and the housing crisis and, you know, the banking issues and the automobile dealers, manufacturers. There's a lot of conflict out there. There's a lot of uncertainty. And if you have employees at your organization, they probably have that too. And recently, I read an article by a guy named Johnny Moore, and he revealed several facts and keys that will help you work through and benefit from conflict. So let's go over some of these facts and some of these keys. Fact number one, conflict is a part of the growing process. That's a fact. Conflict is a part of the growing process. Growing itself is a form of conflict. Growth itself is a form of conflict. Pushing against something moving is conflict. Someone has said that conflict is two objects trying to occupy the same space at the same time. You want to see conflict? Go to the mall on about December 23rd, maybe even 24th, and just walk around the parking lot, and you'll see cars or drivers trying to put their cars two at a time in one parking place. there's conflict. When we are determined to grow, whether personally or organizationally, we experience resistance or conflict. However, as we press on through the process, we learn and we grow. Fact number two, conflict will reveal who you are. Now, what is in us will eventually come out when the pressure is turned up. It's just like the turning on the stove and putting a water kettle on it, and when it gets hot, it starts to whistle. It really shows who you are. Fact number three, conflict will reveal what your team is made up to. Team meaning your staff, your organizational group, your employees, whatever, however you want to refer to them. When navigating through conflict with your staff or your leaders, you will discover things that you did not know were there, some good and some not so good. Nevertheless, it helps you as a leader know what you're dealing with and how to further develop your people for greatness. So conflict will reveal what your team is made of. And the fourth fact that I'll give you about this is conflict can save the organization from catastrophe. When conflict arises, you become aware of things to which you were formerly blind. If you ignore conflict, it can eventually destroy the organization. However, if you recognize conflict and properly navigate through it, the organization can become stronger and grow, thus fulfilling the purpose for which it exists. Now, I'm sure that at least one of these facts can be applied to your life or the life of your organization. Now, whether conflict has helped you grow or has saved you from catastrophe, there are some important keys to navigating through conflict. Just as that cruise liner navigates its way through the mammoth icebergs, you must navigate your life through life's challenges and conflicts. So let me give you some keys. I'm going to give you, if you're taking notes, I'm going to give you six keys. Key number one, recognize the signs of conflict coming its way, coming your way. The signs of coming conflict. A true leader knows that conflict will come. Therefore, he keeps his eyes on the horizon, watching and listening for the signs. It's kind of like listening, putting your ear down to the railroad tracks, listening for the train. Just as the weatherman watches for dark clouds, heavy winds, and sudden temperature change, so the leader must be looking for changing elements. Conflict is the life of a leader. Conflict in the life of a leader could be negative comments from a staff. Those are like the dark clouds. Or it could be personal agendas emphasized more than the mission of the organization. Those could be like the heavy winds. And key leadership appearing withdrawn and distant. That could be like sudden temperature change. So you've got to recognize the signs of the conflict is coming. The second key is return to the mission of the organization. Return to the mission of the organization. The mission of the organization is always the compass. It always will guide you in the direction you need to go. Conflict arises because people follow their feelings instead of the compass. If you or your organization is off course, I suggest you spend some time discussing the mission. And believe me, towards the end of the year is no better time to do that. Key number three, rally the team. Rally the team. It is impossible to get the organization back on track when the people are scattered. If you've ever tried to lead an event or lead an organization and people are just, they've got their own mind, their own agendas, it's tough. It is, I'll just say, impossible to do that. When we rally the team, we strengthen the team. We must continue to remind the team that where we must go together. Key number four. Require loyalty and integrity. I can't emphasize this enough. It's probably the most important key in my opinion. Require loyalty and integrity. In navigating through conflict, there has to be open, honest communication, and without loyalty and integrity, this type of communication simply will not happen. Now, it's been suggested that the leader's loyalty must be first to the organization and second to the individual. The individual or the employee's loyalty must be first to the leader and second to the organization. I'll let you think about that one. Key number five, design a process for solving problems. Problems are going to come. Conflict's coming, so might as well have a process or a systematic approach to dealing with it. In order for an organization to function properly and effectively, it must have a troubleshooting process. This process should include an official chain of command, input from those involved, flexible procedures, and follow through on final decisions and team cooperation. You've got to have a process. And the last one is just roll on. Key number six, roll on. Leaders must continue to lead even in conflict. And too many leaders, when conflict arises, here's what happens. They quit leading and begin trying to solve the problems. Leaders must lead even in conflict. Now, conflict is a good sign of possible progress, so conflict is a good thing. However, it is the leader's responsibility to navigate the organization through the conflict. To do this, one must remain focused on the mission. Remember, it's the compass, not the conflict. Keep your eyes and mind and focus on the right thing. But just remember, conflict is on its way. All right, that is three of the four building blocks of a successful business. So we've got one more to go, and that is challenge your staff. Challenge your staff. You know, one of the most popular events, at least to me, in the Olympics is the pole vault event. Now, we will all watch with amazement and anticipation as the competitor runs full speed down the track with a long pole in his hands. Now, I'd like to know who invented this and what in the world was going on in their mind when they came up with this idea. But then the jumper hangs on for dear life as he lowers the pole downwards into a hole that propels him high up in the air. I don't know how high they go, but it looks like it's about 20 feet. High enough to clear the bar that's in front of him. And the jumper then has a soft landing on his back, ready to jump even higher the next time. Now, the goal of the jumper is not to be the fastest down the track or to be the most efficient at hitting the mark with the pole. No, the goal is to jump high enough to clear the bar. Then do it again and again and again and every time that the bar is raised. Whether you know it or not, there is a bar to be raised or lowered in your organization. Now, you may say, well, I'm the only employee in my organization. Okay, maybe there's an exception. But when you hire your first one, there's a bar. It's to be raised or lowered in your organization. This bar is called the bar of expectation. The bar of expectation. And each time you expect more of your staff or your volunteers or yourself, you're raising that bar. But how far can you raise the bar and how fast? My experience while working with all types of organizations is that there is a tried and true fact. The smaller the organization, the lower the bar of expectations. In other words, the fewer people you have to work with, the less you can really expect or demand out of them. Now, let me give you an example. Let's take a small choir. The choir director wants so bad to perform like a 500-voice choir, but knows if she puts too much demand on the choir members, they just might quit. And that'll leave holes that might be impossible for the rest of the group to fill. Or she might have a hard time getting members in the first place because her expectations are just too high. Conversely, if we look at that 500-voice choir, we see a director with the same dreams. dreams to perform at peak potential. The difference in this situation is the choir director can start out with high expectations or put rather high demands on his or her members because he or she knows that there are many who would love to be a member of the choir. Now, you might be saying, well, how do I raise the bar in my organization? Well, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. In my experience, I have discovered four techniques that you can do to continually raise the bar. And these will challenge your team members to become more effective in their duties and strive for their dreams. And the first one is listen to where each team member is. Listen to where each team member is. This is especially important if you acquire a new team member or a new employee, or if you yourself are the new leader of the team. Listening to not only what is said, but what is also not, can help you determine areas of weakness in your team member's life, or in their leadership skills, or in their ability. Plan one-on-one conversations where you can listen for areas of insecurity or fear or frustration, maybe passion or past experience or confusion. Plan those one-on-one opportunities. You know, hearing comes naturally. You're hearing my voice right now. It's all natural to all of us. But listening is learned. The better you learn to listen, the more your team member will open up and share where he is and where he wants to go. The better you learn to listen, the more open your team will be. So listen to where each team member is. The second one is learn to be patient. Oh, my gosh. Another one tough for me. In most small organizations, most people on a leadership team are used to the status quo. Therefore, when you challenge them to grow in new ways, you must be patient. If you go too fast, they will dig in their feet or put up walls or maybe even both. It is difficult to go slow when you see your team members with such great potential. When you see that potential there, at least in me, I want to push them so hard because it frustrates me when I see great potential that's not being tapped. The next one is lead one step at a time. Remember, they are a small cup and you are a gallon of water. If you pour out all your knowledge and experience and dreams and desires and everything else, you will quickly overflow their cup. Therefore, just lead one step at a time in the areas that you have detected that are weak. Now, let me give you some weak areas that I find in most people that are especially in the smaller organizations. First of all, time management skills. They really don't know how to manage their time. Well, time is the most important thing. It's really all we have on this earth. It's the only thing we've got. The next one is developing an ongoing personal growth plan. Most people really want to be different. They want to be successful, but they don't have that personal growth plan in place to help them reach it. And you as their leader, their boss, whatever, their manager, you can help them do that. Teamwork and how to develop a team. Most people, employees in a small organization, they don't know how to develop a team. There's all kinds of great books and materials out there that you can help them learn with. The next one is pursuing excellence in everything that they do. Pursuing excellence in everything that they do. Many times, because of that status quo whatever in the organization, they're just happy with that. And if they do it just okay, that's fine, but not excellent. So pursuing excellence is not something they always do. And the last one is learning to think big. Learning to think big. Most in a small organization, they're small thinkers. You got to help them think big. The last that I want to give you under building block number four and challenge your staff is to list what you expect and inspect what you list. In order for anyone on your team to grow, you must hold them accountable. Now, this must be done carefully because if done incorrectly, you could be faced with many embarrassing holes in your organization. Remember the choir, that small choir. The best way I've found to hold people accountable in a smaller organization is to challenge them with a goal that's measurable and obtainable and requires action and has a deadline. By doing this, you will see how strong of a leader that they are and how they can perform when a deadline is approaching. Now, you'll be able to increase your demands or your expectations as the organization grows and as your leaders increase their leadership ability. The larger the organization gets, the bigger the goals can be. Remember that. The greatest part about this is the reward. It's almost like you're a proud father watching your child sing her first solo or hit the home run to win the game. When your team members begin to accomplish bigger goals in less time, you know you're becoming a more effective leader and your expectations can rise. And remember this, go slow and you will grow. Go slow and you will grow. So, four building blocks of a successful business: understanding how to achieve and handle success, manage your life's agenda, navigate through conflict, and challenge your staff.